This is Bob Martin for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. This program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. This opening music is courtesy of Joseph Martin, Professor of Music at the Lamont School of Music at Denver University. Welcome to the Poetry Corner. Joyce Kilmer's most noted poem is Trees. This poem first appeared in print in 1913. Later, some would claim that he wrote it about one particular tree, but his wife and son said that it was not a tree or group of trees, but all trees. Tragically, Kilmer was killed in combat during the First World War in 1918. As a tribute to his work, the National Forest Service established a memorial forest in his name in July of 1936. It is located near Robbinsville, about 100 miles west of Asheville, North Carolina. Trees. I think that I shall never see a poem lovely as a tree. A tree whose hungry mouth is pressed against the earth's sweet flowing breast. A tree that looks at God all day and lifts her leafy arms to pray. A tree that may in summer wear a nest of robins in her hair, upon whose bosom snow is lain, who intimately lives with rain. Poems are made by fools like me, but only God can make a tree. In two of our earlier programs, we had poems by Robert Service, The Cremation of Sam McGee, and Dangerous Dan McGrew. They were about life in the Klondike. In 1928, there was published a parody of this style of work written by a Yale graduate, Edward Paramore. It became one of the most talked about poems of the century, and even was the basis for a motion picture. Here it follows, The Ballad of Yukon Jack. Oh, the North Country is a hard country that mothers a bloody brood, and its icy arms hold hidden charms for the greedy, the sinful, and lewd. And strong men rust from the gold and lust that sears the Northland soul. But the wickedest born from the pole to the horn is a hermit of Sharktooth Shoal. Now Jacob Kame was a hermit's name in the days of his pious youth, ere he cast a smirch on the Baptist church by betraying a girl named Ruth. But now men quake at Yukon Jake, the hermit of Sharktooth Shoal, for that is the name that Jacob Kame is known by from Nome to the pole. He was just a boy in the parson's joy, ere he fell for the gold in the muck. And he learned to pray with the hogs and hay on a farm near Keokuk. But a service tale of illicit kale and whiskey and women wild drained the morals clean as a soup tureen from this poor but honest child. He longed for the bite of a Yukon night in the northern light's weird flicker, for a game of scud in the frozen mud and the taste of raw red liquor. He wanted to mush along in the slush with a team of husky hounds and to fire his gat at a beaver hat and knock it out of bounds. So he left his home for the Helltown Nome on Alaska's ice-ribbed shores, and he learned to curse and to drink, and worse, till the rum dripped from his pores. When the boys on a spree were drinking it free in a Malamute saloon, and Dan McGrew and his dangerous crew shot craps with a piebald coon. When the kid on his stool banged away like a fool at a jagtime melody, and the barkeep vowed to the hard-boiled crowd that he'd cremate Sam McGee. Then Jacob Kame, who had taken the name of Yukon Jack the Killer, would rake the dive with his 45 till the atmosphere grew chiller. With a sharp command, he'd make them stand and deliver their hard-earned dust, then drink the bar dry of rum and rye, as a Klondike bully must. Without coming to blows, he would tweak the nose of dangerous Dan McGrew, and becoming bolder, throw over his shoulder the lady that's known as Lou. Oh, tough as steak was Yukon Jack, hard-boiled as a picnic egg. He washed his shirt in a Klondike dirt, and he drank his rum by the keg. In fear of their lives, or because of their wives, he was shunned by the best of his pals, an outcast he from the camaraderie of all but wild animals. So he bought him the whole of Sharktooth Shoal, a reef in the Bering Sea, and he lived by himself on a sea lion's shelf in lonely iniquity. But miles away in Keokuk IA did a ruined maiden fight to remove the smirch from the Baptist church by bringing the heathen light. And the elders declared that all would be squared if she carried the holy words from her Keokuk home to the Helltown Nome to save those sinful birds. So 2 weeks later, she took a freighter for the gold-cursed land near the pole. But heaven ain't made for a lass that betrayed. She was wrecked on the Sharktooth Shoal. All hands were tossed in the sea and lost, all but the maiden Ruth, who swam to the edge of the sea lion's ledge where abode the love of her youth. He was hunting a seal for an evening meal. He handled a mean harpoon when he saw at his feet not something to eat, but a girl in a frozen swoon, whom he dragged to his lair by her dripping hair, and he rubbed her knees with gin. To his surprise, she opened her eyes and revealed his original sin. His 8 months' beard grew stiff and weird, and it felt like a chestnut burr. And he swore by his gizzard and the Arctic blizzard that he'd do right by her. But the cold sweat froze on the end of his nose till it gleamed like a Tekla pearl, while her bright hair fell like a flame from hell down the back of the grateful girl. But a hopeless rake was Yukon Jake, the hermit of Sharktooth Shoal, and the dizzy maid he re-betrayed and wrecked her immortal soul. Then he rowed her ashore with a broken oar, and he sold her to Dan McGrew for a husky dog and hot eggnog, as rascals are wont to do. Now Ruthless Ruth is a maiden couth with scarlet cheeks and lips, and she sings rough songs to the drunken throngs that come from the sealing ships. For a rouge state kiss from this infamous miss, they will give a seal sleek fur, or perhaps a sable, if they are able. It's much the same to her. Oh, the northern country is a hard country that mothers a bloody brood, and its icy arms hold hidden charms for the greedy, the sinful, and lewd. And strong in rust from the gold and lust that sears the northland soul, but the wickedest born from the pole to the horn is a hermit of Sharktooth Shoal. At the time of his death in 1971, the New York Times called Ogden Nash the best-known poet of humorous verse. Here's a sample of his work in a piece entitled To My Valentine. More than a catbird loves a cat, or a criminal hates a clue, or the Axis hates the United States, that's how much I love you. I love you more than a duck can swim, and more than a grapefruit squirts. I love you more than a gin rummy is a bore, and more than a toothache hurts. As a shipwrecked sailor hates the sea, or a juggler hates a shove, as a hostess detests unexpected guests, that's how much you I love. I love you more than a wasp can sting, and more than a subway jerks. I love you as much as a beggar needs a crutch, and more than a hangnail irks. I swear to you by the stars above and below, if such there be, as a high court loathes injurious oaths, that's how you're loved by me. Our next work comes from Robert Louis Stevenson. He was born in Scotland in 1850, best known for his novels like Treasure Island, Kidnapped, and The Strange Case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. He also produced much poetry, and much of it was contained in a book entitled The Child's Garden of Verse. From that work, My Shadow. I have a little shadow that goes in and out with me, and what can be the use of him is more than I can see. He is very, very like me, from the heels up to the head, and I see him jump before me when I jump into my bed. The funniest thing about him is the way he likes to grow, not at all like proper children, which is always very slow, for he sometimes shoots up taller, like an India rubber ball, and he sometimes gets so little that there's none of him at all. He hasn't got a notion of how children ought to play, and can only make a fool of me in every sort of way. He stays so close beside me, he's a coward, you can see. I'd think shame to stick to Nursie as that shadow sticks to me. One morning very early before the sun was up, I rose and found the shining dew on every buttercup. But my lazy little shadow, like an errant sleepy head, had stayed at home behind me and was fast asleep in bed. And so much to do when the little one and his shadow were about, as suggested in this poem by Shel Silverstein, Dirty Face. Where did you get such a dirty face, my darling dirty-faced child? I got it from crawling around in the dirt and biting two buttons off Jeremy's shirt. I got it from chewing the roots of a rose and digging for clams in the yard with my nose. I got it from peeking into a dark cave and painting myself like a Navajo brave. I got it from playing with coal in the bin and signing my name in cement with my chin. I got it from rolling around on the rug and giving the horrible dog a big hug. I got it from finding a lost silver mine and eating sweet blackberries right off the vine. I got it from ice cream and wrestling in tears and having more fun than you've had in years. Or when not doing all those things, just looking around to see what else is happening. As suggested by this poem by Alfred Noyes, Daddy Fell Into the Pond. Everyone grumbled, the sky was gray, we had nothing to do and nothing to say. We were nearing the end of a dismal day, and then there seemed to be nothing beyond. Then, Daddy fell into the pond. And everyone's face grew merry and bright, and Timothy danced for sheer delight. Give me the camera, quick, oh quick! He's crawling out of the duckweed! Click! Then the gardener suddenly slapped his knee and doubled up, shaking silently. And the ducks all quacked as if they were daft, and it sounded as if the old drake laughed. Oh, there wasn't a thing that didn't respond when Daddy fell into the pond. There must come an end to every child's day, so this next work by Eugene Fields was meant as a bedtime story. Winkin', Blinkin', and Nod. Winkin', Blinkin', and Nod one night sailed off in a wooden shoe, sailed on a river of crystal light into a sea of dew. Where are you going, and what do you wish? The old moon asked the three. We have come to fish for the herring fish that live in this beautiful sea. Nets of silver and gold have we, said Winkin', Blinkin', and Nod. The old moon laughed and sang a song as they rocked in their wooden shoe, and the wind that sped them all night long ruffled the waves of dew. The little stars were the herring fish that lived in the beautiful sea. Now cast your nets wherever you wish, never afraid are we. So cried the stars to the fishermen three, Winkin', Blinkin', and Nod. All night long their nets they threw to the stars in the twinkling foam. Then down from the skies came the wooden shoe, bringing the fishermen home. 'Twas all so pretty a sail, it seemed as if it could not be. And some folk thought 'twas a dream they dreamed of sailing that beautiful sea. But I shall name you the fishermen three, Winkin', Blinkin', and Nod. Winkin' and Blinkin' are two little eyes, and Nod is a little head. And the wooden shoe that sailed the skies is a wee one's trundle bed. So shut your eyes while Mother sings of wonderful sights that be, and you shall see the beautiful things as you rock in the misty sea, where the old shoe rocked the fishermen's three, Winkin', Blinken, and nod. And possibly a reflection on that moment by A.A. Milne, Vespers. Little boy kneels at the foot of his bed, droops on the little hand's little gold head. Hush, hush, whisper who dares, Christopher Robin is saying his prayers. God bless Mummy, I know that's right. Oh, wasn't it fun in the bath tonight? The cold so cold, and the hot so hot. Oh, God bless Daddy, I quite forgot. If I open my fingers a little bit more, I can see Nanny's dressing gown on the door. It's a beautiful blue, but it hasn't a hood. Oh, God bless Nanny, and make her good. Mine has a hood, and I lie in bed, and pull the hood right over my head, and I shut my eyes, and I curl up small, and nobody knows that I'm here at all. Oh, thank you, God, for a lovely day. And what was the other I had to say? I said, bless Daddy, so what can it be? Oh, now I remember. God bless me. Little boy kneels at the foot of his bed, droops on his little hands, little gold head. Hush, hush, whisper who dares, Christopher Robin is saying his prayers. Next we have the work of New York poet Robert Henry Newell, who wrote in the middle to the end of the 19th century. He gained notoriety from satirical articles he wrote about the latter stages of the Civil War and society in general. He wrote under the pseudonym of Orpheus C. Kerr, a takeoff of Office Seeker, referring to the practice of the time of awarding government posts not to the most qualified, but to those who faithfully worked to get someone elected. He was said to be one of the favorites of Abraham Lincoln, and when General Montgomery Meigs once said he had never heard of him, Lincoln replied that anyone who hadn't read him was a heathen. It might be that Newell had the Civil War in mind when he wrote this poem entitled A Great Fight. There was a man in Arkansas as let his passions rise, and not unfrequently picked out some other varmint's eyes. His name was Tuscaloosa Sam, and often he would say, "There's not a cuss in Arkansas I can't whip any day." One morn a stranger passing by heard Sammy talking so, and down he scrambled from his horse, and off his coat did go. He sort of kind of shut one eye and spit into his hand, and put his ugly head one side and twitched his trouser band. "My boy," said he, "it's my belief, whomever you may be, that I can make you screech and smell particular agony." "I'm there," said Tuscaloosa Sam, and chucked his hat away. "I'm there," says he, and buttoned up as far as buttons may. He thundered on the stranger's mug, the stranger pounded he, and oh, the way them critters fought was beautiful to see. They clinched like two rampacious bears, and then went down a bit. They swore a stream of 6-inch oaths, and fit, and fit, and fit. When Sam would try to work away and on his pegs to get, the stranger'd pull him back, and so they fit, and fit, and fit. Then like a pair of lobsters both upon the ground were knit, and yet the varmints used their teeth and fit, and fit, and fit. The sun of noon was high above and hot enough to split, but only riled the fellers more that fit, and fit, and fit. The stranger snapped at Sammy's nose and shortened it a bit, and then they both swore awful hard and fit and fit and fit. The mud it flew, the sky grew dark, and all the lightnings lit, but still them critters rolled about and fit and fit and fit. First Sam on top, then the other chap. When one would make a hit, the other'd smell the grass, and so they fit and fit and fit. The night came on, the stars shone out as bright as women's wit, and still them fellers swore and gouged and fit and fit and fit. The neighbors heard the noise they made and thought an earthquake lit, yet all the while 'twas him and Sam, his fit and fit and fit. For miles around, the noise was heard. Folks couldn't sleep a bit because them two rantankerous chaps still fit and fit and fit. But just as cockcrow suddenly, there came an awful pause, and I and my old man run out to ascertain the cause. The sun was rising in the east and lit the hull concern, but not a sign of either chap was found at any turn. Yet in the region where they fit, we found, to our surprise, one pint of buttons, two big knives, some whiskers, and four eyes. In 1918, Irving Berlin wrote the very popular song, God Bless America. It was reissued in 1938 as a song of patriotism and peace in the face of the rise of Adolf Hitler. But within the country still coming out of the Depression, many felt it was unrealistic in their own lives. One such person was Woody Guthrie, who had experienced the poverty of the Dust Bowl and the less than idyllic journey of many Oklahoma residents on their journey to California. In response, in 1940, he wrote a song which he originally entitled God Blessed America. He later struck that out and replaced it simply by the title The Land. Here follows are the original lyrics as composed on February 23, 1940, in Guthrie's room at the Hanover Hotel in New York. This land is your land. This land is my land. From the California to the Staten New York Island. From the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. God blessed America for me. As I went walking that ribbon of highway, and saw above me the endless skyway, and saw below me the golden valley, I said, God blessed America for me. I roamed and rambled and followed my footsteps to the sparkling sands of Verdiamond deserts, and all around me a voice was sounding, God blessed America for me. Was a high wall there that tried to stop me, a sign was painted said, private property, but on the backside it didn't say nothing. God blessed America for me. When the sun was shining, then I was strolling in wheat fields waving and dust clouds rolling. The voice was chanting as the fog was lifting. God blessed America for me. One bright shiny morning in the shadow of the steeple, by the relief office I saw my people. As they stood hungry, I stood there wondering if God blessed America for me. Over the ensuing years, the song underwent many changes, and versions tailored to different situations appeared in Canada, Sweden, the UK, Belgium, and Turkey. Guthrie also changed the title of it. He now called it, This Land Was Made for You and Me. And this is what it sounded like in 1944. This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island. From the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you and me. As I was walking that ribbon of highway, I saw above me that endless skyway. I saw below me that golden valley. This land was made for you and me. I roamed and rambled, and I followed my footsteps to the sparkling sands of Verdiamond deserts. While I walked around me, a voice was sounding, This land was made for you and me. When the sun came shining, and I was strolling, and the wheat fields waving, and the dust clouds rolling, a voice was chanting as the fog was lifting, This land was made for you and me. This land is your land. This land is my land, from California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you and me. A real-life hobo, Haywire Mac, is credited with our next piece. His real name was Harry McClintock, and he claimed to have written it around 1895, but some believe that it came from a tradition that dates back even farther. It was recorded as a song in 1928 and expressed the dream of a better life that moved into the whole country during the years of the Great Depression. The Big Rock Candy Mountain. One evening as the sun went down and the jungle fire was burning, down the track came a hobo hiking, and he said, "Boys, I'm not turning. I'm heading for a land that's far away beside the crystal fountains. So come with me, we'll all go see the Big Rock Candy Mountains. In the Big Rock Candy Mountains, there's a land that's fair and bright, where the handouts grow on bushes and you sleep out every night. Where the boxcars all are empty and the sun shines every day. And the birds and the bees and the cigarette trees and the lemonade springs where the bluebird sings in the Big Rock Candy Mountains. In the Big Rock Candy Mountains, all the cops have wooden legs. The bulldogs all have rubber teeth and the hens lay soft-boiled eggs. The farmer's trees are full of fruit and the barns are full of hay. Oh, I'm bound to go where there ain't no snow, where the rain don't pour and the wind don't blow, in the Big Rock Candy Mountains. In the Big Rock Candy Mountains, you never change your socks, and the little streams of alcohol come trickling down the rocks. There the brakemen have to tip their hats, and the railroad bulls are blind. There's a lake of stew and of whiskey, too. You can paddle all around 'em in a big canoe in the Big Rock Candy Mountains. In the Big Rock Candy Mountains, all the jails are made of tin, and you can bust right out again as soon as they put you in. There ain't no short-handed shovels, no axes, saws, or picks. I'm going to stay where you sleep all day, where they hung the Turk that invented work, in the Big Rock Candy Mountains. It wasn't just hobos that had dreams. It was something that was current in all America at the time. We had gotten through the Depression, and now we were engaged in World War II. In 1943, Richard Rodgers and Oscar Hammerstein created the musical Oklahoma. Brooks Atkinson, reviewing for the New York Times, wrote that the opening number changed the history of musical theater. It was also something that apparently the entire country needed. The song, "Oh, What a Beautiful Morning." There's a bright golden haze on the meadow. There's a bright golden haze on the meadow. The corn is as high as an elephant's eye, and it looks like it's climbing clear up to the sky. Oh, what a beautiful morning. Oh, what a beautiful day. I've got a wonderful feeling everything's going my way. All the cattle are standing like statues. All the cattle are standing like statues. They don't turn their heads as they see me ride by, but a little brown maverick is winking her eye. Oh, what a beautiful morning. Oh, what a beautiful day. I've got a wonderful feeling. Everything's going my way. All the sounds of the earth are like music. All the sounds of the earth are like music. The breeze is so busy, it don't miss a tree. And an old weeping willer is laughing at me. Oh, what a beautiful morning. Oh, what a beautiful day. I've got a wonderful feeling. Everything's going my way. This is Bob Martin for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. This program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. And thank you for listening in to the Poetry Corner.